Vancouver campus, our listenership extends to the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations and beyond. We encourage you to check out native-land.ca, that is native-land.ca, to learn more about whose land and territory you live and work on or may be visiting. Thank you.
Hello, you're tuning to CITR 101.9 FM, Cleo Skivinsky Suje, Penisakai Decho Gotse Dene Eat. My name is Cleo Skivinsky. My pronouns are they, them, theirs, and I'm Decho Dene from Treaty 11 Territory. I'm the Indigenous Collective Lead here at CITR, and I'm honored to welcome you to this decolonial space today. I'm a fourth-year student in the field of Sociology and First Nation and Indigenous Studies. On today's episode, we are joined by Maya Jacoby and Carolyn Cronin. We are jumping into the Indigenous metaverse. We'll be talking about Biscopian. Biscopian is an Anishinaabe word that has come into use to describe reclamation and cultural resurgence. Biscopian is a verb that describes the feeling of returning home after a long journey. The project team are oriented towards the goal to create an online space where Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples can experience an Indigenized curriculum and learn Anishinaabe Mwen. Anishinaabe Mwen is the language of the Anishinaabe, a group of First Nation communities from Lake Nipigon region. Using quests, virtual activities, and learning games, they aim to increase the number of second language speakers over the next decade. By fusing virtual metaverse technologies and traditional Anishinaabe storytelling practices, Biscayabien provides inclusive, sustainable, high-quality intercultural learning materials produced by and in support by Indigenous peoples. Before I get carried away talking about the amazing work of the project, I'd like to invite my guests to join me. Maya and Carolyn joined by Zoom today. Musi Cho, Maya and Carolyn, would you please introduce yourselves to listeners, perhaps with your names, pronouns, and anything else that feels right to you in this space?
Aha, Waje, Vosho, Odeme Kandishna Kaz, Amakandodam, Kaminista Kwan Ndunji, Inokom Toronto Nindeshita, York University Nintashi Anoki, Wingi Nimanwentan Kayayan, Nongkom. Thank you all for having me here today. My name is Maya Shakabe. I'm Beaver Clan Anishinaabe from the Thunder Bay region. My family comes from Red Rock First Nation and Anambigosagag Anishinaabe First Nation. And I currently live in Toronto. I teach sociology at the York University Glendon campus. Miigwech.
Hello, my name is Carolyn and my pronouns are she, her, and I work for Univirtual. So we're a company that creates metaverses for education and training. So we are a partner of the Biscayabien project. And as part of that project, I provide the kind of marketing and PR materials, including social media. So probably anything that you've seen out there to do with the project at the moment has been posted by me. And I'm very honored to work on this project with Maya and to learn so much about the Anishinaabe peoples and their language stories. It's like fascinating to be involved with, and I love learning more every single day. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk about the project.
Nezu, beautiful. Thank you. It's great to meet both of you virtually. Let's just jump into some of the questions I have for you guys. From my understanding, Biscayabien began as a card game. Would you mind telling me a bit about the transition from tabletop language learning to immersive digital storytelling?
Absolutely. Can I go a little further back than that?
For sure. Please do.
So back in time? Okay. Gwibangiet Soka Nokom. I want to tell you a little story. In the Anishinaabe culture, we have this first teacher or this trickster being called Nana Bojo. So that's what this story is about, and it frames why we're doing what we're doing today. So Weishketsu'i Nana Bojo Nupumin Kishitach. Nana Bojo lived out in the bush long time ago, and this one Anishinaabe encountered Nana Bojo and was like, "Oh, I want to ask you something," said. "How is it that you got so smart?" he said to Nana Bojo. Nana Bojo said, "Up on that hill there, see that hill over there? There's this little trail. And on top of that trail, Yakitawaminenayan. There's these smart berries, and I eat those smart berries, and that's how I get so smart, he said. Anishinaabe is so excited. He says, ah, Wintamaushinantineke, you gotta tell me where those are, man. Come on, let's go. And so off they go into the bush, up the hill, and they find that little path on the top of the hill, tiny Mikinens, that little trail. And Manabosho says, Miamon Beji, Sakamon Beji, go ahead, look, there's those smart berries. Pick them up and pop them in your mouth. And so Anishinaabe runs up there and scoops up a bunch of these smart berries and pops them in his mouth and has a big bite of them and looks at Manabosho and says, yo, those aren't smart berries, Nanabojo. Those are rabbit turds. And Nanabojo looks over at him and says, hey, you see, you're getting smarter already. How many of you eat rabbit turds out there?
I hope not too many, but if it makes you smarter, it makes you smarter, right?
But that's what happens to us. I think many of us think that we can go and pop a whole bunch of information and facts in our mouths and regurgitate that, and that's what makes us smart. You're in school, aren't you?
Yeah, that's definitely the rhetoric going on here, is like you just keep consuming, eventually you'll produce the same thing.
Gotta just take it in and regurgitate it back out on the paper, what your professors tell you, what your learning tells you, Western education tells you. We've been doing this, you know, since public school, just regurgitating the Western colonial idea of what knowledge is. And that's what I found when I was looking at what Anishinaabe Mohen Ojibwe language, second language learning was in the early days was really modeled after, was just memorizing a bunch of nouns and spitting them out again, or memorizing some, you know, basic terms and spitting it out. And that was it. And so a lot of our indigenous knowledges around language was left out of that. It was just memorize, regurgitate, spit out. And it's the same with all the different courses you have to take in school. You know, you just memorize it and you get your A pluses if you can eat those rabbit turds perfectly and spit them back out. So I wanted to tell that story to frame this as the inspiration for me going forward in creating even the tabletop game, was to create a space where we weren't doing that Western colonial pedagogy, that we were doing Anishinaabe pedagogy. And we have very sophisticated ways of teaching and learning in our own civilizations. And I wanted to make sure that that's what was happening. And one of those sophisticated ways, of course, is at Sokanan, is telling stories and learning the philosophies that are all embedded inside those stories. And that's what I wanted to create. And so the card game, the tabletop, I don't know if any of you have played Dungeons and Dragons, but I took the idea of going on a quest for the language. And the bad guys in the story that I created for the language, to reclaim the language, the bad guys were the linguicidals. So if any of you are familiar with the concept of linguicide, that is a purposeful and intentional decimation of our languages. That's an easy definition of what a linguicide is. And so I created these characters called linguicidals that the questers had to then go on adventures and fight. And they would have to go through different levels and create different types of character classes in our tabletop game in order to destroy the linguicidals and bring back the magic of Anishinaabe Mohen, of the language, to the land. And every time they destroy a linguicidal, they brought more language back. And it was so cool because I was finding that even in maybe 12 hours of language learning by doing it like this, two really cool things happened. The first is that people were retaining the grammatical nuances of the language at a very advanced level because they were doing a quest. I didn't have to tell them fancy things like animate and transitive verbs and, you know, conjunct and transitive, obviative, all these ridiculous linguistic terms. I didn't have to use any of that. They're just fighting linguistic idols. And so they were picking up on the grammatical structures of the language in really advanced ways in a very short amount of time. So that was sort of the first part of why I created this. And I actually had to rewrite the grammar of Anishinaabemowin, because the way it had been written in linguistic terms, it didn't make sense in terms of our worldview. So in Anishinaabemowin, there are four main parts of speech. And if you think about our medicine wheel, our circle, wow, there's four parts to that circle. So we're going to take a journey around the circle, and you're going to learn those fancy grammar things as you go through the circle. The second reason I did this tabletop game, as I noticed many of my own people were really struggling when they arrived in class. They were depressed, anxious, sad, scared to learn their language, feeling a lot of shame and blame that they didn't have their language. So they were coming to class triggered or emotionally charged. And if you know anything about trauma, when you're triggered or emotionally charged, you're in your amygdala. And that little part of your brain, you can't process information, right? You're just, the emotions are overwhelming. So by creating a story, it brought in a lot of humor. And it also took away that shame and blame, because we're all going on an adventure together. So we can laugh and challenge each other and fight these little bosses and earn stickers. As every time you accomplish something, you get a sticker and score points in your adventure and level up your character, you know, all those fun D&D things. So that's how the tabletop version came about. That's cool, isn't it? I thought it was cool.
That's very cool. Even just the idea of how language can, the language learning aspect of understanding, like, it's very scary to go into a classroom. And something I've talked to with a couple of my friends here at UBC, a couple of them are Anishinaabe and they are learning Anishinaabemowin. They had gone on and said, yeah, I go to like Anishinaabemowin classes that are hosted by certain community members here, and I don't know anything, but I walk in and it's like, everyone seems to know what's going on and I'm the one left behind. And all I know how to do is study languages at a university level or at a high school pace. Like, I don't understand how to engage with this language in a way that feels meaningful to me. Like, I see a lot of value in even just the card game and like the conception of it, especially the stickers. Who doesn't love the good, like, dopamine rush of getting a sticker because you did something great?
Yeah, I have like adults in my classes rushing to get their stickers. That's very important. Everybody wants to make sure they've got all the right stickers as badges for their accomplishments, and they're super proud of it. So it's, I guess the fancy term that we use today is trauma informed. So through storytelling and creating adventures, making a safe trauma informed place, recognizing that a lot of our people come to learning language from a place of blame, shame, fear, not feeling native enough, worthy enough, you know, all those things that we have carried with us from intergenerational trauma. And that's why the story piece worked so well. And it's just made a big difference in how people are retaining the language in a blame-free, shame-free environment. So that was the beginning. And I did tons of, you know, testing and modifying of just the tabletop adventure so that everybody would, and I want to make sure everybody would get to the level that we were all collectively in. So no one gets past level one, for example, until everyone can do it. So you have to help each other. And, you know, there's lots of chances to try to succeed until everyone has succeeded. And then we go to the next level. And that way, no one is left behind. And it takes into the way the characters are designed, like the classes are designed, is really oriented around different styles of learning. So if you want to be in the warrior class, for example, you're someone who loves pronunciation or loves to type things out. You're a kinesthetic learner. So you get points for typing those things out or saying them out loud and having beautiful, perfect pronunciation. That's where you get your points. And then you have learners who are like crazy over vocabulary. They want to have all the words. Those are the arcanist characters. So people get challenges that are based on how much vocabulary they understand as they're doing this. Then you have folks who like me, love grammar. And that's the engineer class where you get to, as engineers are, we call them engineers in our tabletop version, where you get to actually score points if you understand how sentence structures work and, you know, what the little pieces of each part of the sentence are. And then you have your regular shit disturbers in class, right? That's also a style of learning. People who like to challenge things, people who don't want to follow the rules, or find loopholes around the rules. And so I made that an actual class of character to play through the tabletop called the Trickster. And now there's Trickster quests as well. And you score points. The more you question things and the more you do these little side quests, if you want to, if you're just, you know, tired of the same old, go and do the side quest then and try out how to do pre-verbs and make your verbs more interesting, and you score points for that. So we kept the mechanics of the tabletop game as we're building the Biscabiang metaverse virtually. That was a key component, was to make sure different learners would then be able to still participate no matter what area of interest they are and what level of language they have. And then began Biscabiang the metaverse.
So how did it go from, like, the card game itself sounds like such a project and such a valuable project. I can't even imagine how excited communities were to receive interactive games that can play together and how intergenerational that could be, because how many folks play cards with their grandparents? I'm definitely one of them. Even meeting my other friends' grandparents, one of the first things we typically do is play card games. When you go camping, it's a medium that keeps giving. And every time you play it, it's something new. And from what you just described, it sounds like it hit every little serotonin bubble in my brain. Just knowing, yeah, like, you level up in certain ways, everyone's strong suits are being put front and center in their learning journey. How does that translate over to the digital format?
Well, one of the things I felt that was missing from the tabletop version was what we like to call comprehensible input. You know, you get enough hours in comprehensible input in your target language, and that builds your proficiency. So, you know, you only do the quest for so long, and then the tabletop version is over. I wanted to create a world where everything you interact with speaks back to you in the language. So you go up to a tree and you not only learn the word for the tree, that tree will talk to you and tell you stories about wigwas, so birch bark traditional stories, and you'll get to hear them in different ways. So that was one part of what I wanted to do, was like have this space where we can all go, and, you know, it's an MMORPG, so it's open world. You can have 100 people join at the same time, or you can have your own instance where it's just your classroom joining, but you can go and wander around and do these little quests where Nokomis grandmother wants you to go, Nasipi, go fetch water. And when you get to the water, you realize the water's polluted, because of course it's a post-apocalyptic world. And so you have to learn how to clean up the area around the water by learning how to fetch certain things and put them away, you know, all those kinds of basic language, conversational language things. And then you can get back to Nokomis and give her the clean water. So those pieces were really important for me, that, like, no matter what you do, you're getting that comprehensible input. The other part of the other reason I wanted to do this was, I don't know how to say this, many of the elders that I work with have passed on, and they've gone back home to spirit, and all of their knowledge and their stories are, many of them are lost or waiting for us to find them again, is another way of thinking of it. But I wanted a place of a living archive inside a virtual metaverse where those elder stories can live on, and can be accessible by anyone and everyone. You don't have to have just been apprenticing with that elder. You can have access to their teachings and their knowledge in the metaverse, no matter when they pass on. So that was the other part of the project, was to create this living archive where the stories from the communities, stories from the elders and the traditional people would remain there in that space, and we can then pick it up as we want to pick it up.
Beautiful. Honestly, that makes me so happy. Fills me with a lot of joy.
Carolyn, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would like to add to that. I think everything that you just said, Maya, is a great example of your amazing mind for gaming. Like so many of the things that you discussed that would happen in the metaverse of Biscarbiang, kind of touched on so many of the things that we are really passionate about when we create metaverses. And like, that's what we're going to be focusing on, I think, when we start to build the world of Biscarbiang in the virtual world. And that's like you said about retaining grammar, like the retention levels were so high because you made it into a quest. And it's that kind of experiential learning that we really love here, and that we like, gamified is another way of saying it. And I think, yeah, when you learn through doing, like it sticks in your head so much more. And I think people who play video games, they can memorize like the, I don't know, like all these facts about this made up world because they're playing it and they love it. And that's what they're going to do when they come into Biscarbiang. They're going to have these game mechanics that really help the information stick in your head. So like the stickers and badges that you would have in a card game would be available in the metaverse world. There'd be other kind of things you can do there, like any kind of game mechanic that works already for the entertainment industry, we like to use for learning. So yeah, there would be maybe like gathering of resources. We want to have an in-game currency. Like the ability to freely roam as well is like important, I think, especially when there's others that you can meet. Like the fact that it's live and networked and that you can learn with others is also an important part of that. So yeah, I think everything that you just said, Maya, about what you'd like to have covers so many of the things that are important to making an online environment so inviting and also like impactful. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly, Carolyn. I mean, I think about the MMO RPGs that I play. I am, you know, vet end game in several of these, you know, hardcore player. And I have, when I talk to my friends on these games, we're speaking a whole other language. If you came in to hear us talk about the sets that we're wearing and how, you know, who needs to be what, and you know, how much you need to parse and all this stuff, we're speaking, and I've learned multiple languages from different MMORPGs. So why not do that in Anishinaabemowin, so people can plan and strategize. So what are we going to need to take down this particular task and achieve it? They're going to need to use the language.
Also, I think that having an avatar and like creating that character, it makes learning through a different perspective easier. Yeah, I think learning other like perspectives is important for like increasing the cultural competencies that we're going to be focusing on for the first part. So that's going to be the first like part of Biscarbiang that we put out, will be kind of cultural competency training. And then once, because it was important, wasn't it, Maya, to us, to for people to understand why the language was so important. So we wanted that to be the first part, and then once you've done that part of the world, the game, then you would start learning the language, but you could also do them together.
Even like thinking about that and thinking about how folks can all join live or have the capacity to only keep it down to their classroom sizes or whatever community they're engaging with Biscarbiang with, what is the vision in terms of like how it's so wide reaching and geographically untethered to? I'm not sure if untethered is the quite right the word, because I imagine that a lot of the virtual places are based on real places that are significant in terms of the storytelling, in terms of like who's playing. But I'm really interested in the idea of like how it'd be accessible not just to folks within a certain place, but like the wide expanse of where people occupy, where people are living.
Well, we have right now in the works two parts to the main storyline. And like Carolyn said, you could come in, let's say you're taking an Indigenous botany class. You could come in with your class and skip all the main story and just go into the bush and interact with the little quests that have to do with gathering medicines or teaching protocols about using medicines. Same thing with making a canoe. Anyone can come and learn that segment as just its own standalone piece. So it's open to anything to do with Indigenous knowledges. You can bring your class in and use it as a platform to teach those knowledges. The region that we're focusing on, our partnership is with Nokiwin Tribal Council, and it was really important for me. That's my home family's tribal council. And it was really important for me to root the world first in my own homelands and the stories and the knowledges from that area. And then our plan as we develop it more is, hey, if the Haudenosaunee folks want to have a zone, we can create an entirely other storyline. And as you move into their homelands, the language changes to Mohawk or Cayuga or Oneida. If you want to go up into the north region, then it'll become Cree. So our plan is to expand to many different languages and traditional teachings, but at first to root it in the Thunder Bay to Lake Nipigon area. And we're working with the elders from those communities to tell stories and then agree to become NPCs or non-playable characters in the world so that they'll live there forever. And the stories that they want to share with people will live there forever. And again, as we expand further on, more and more elders from different communities will hop in and become one of those characters that we create. We create their little mini quests and hold those traditional stories. But the first part of the main story quest is for everyone. It takes you on an adventure to understand, again, in a blame-free, shame-free, story-based way, to really understand the impacts of the colonial matrix of power and how that's impacted all of our communities collectively, and teach folks the basics of what it is, especially non-Indigenous folks, what it is to be a treaty person, and what does that mean? So the first main story quest is, again, how Carolyn talked about it as cultural competencies. If you follow that quest, you'd be really understanding the kinds of relationships and healing work that we all need to do here in order to live well with one another.
I also think that it might be worth mentioning what work you're doing with the Indigenous youth mayor with the surveying of the land, because that's adding that personal touch. And I think that's something that once the world of Biscarbiang is complete, like if there were other geographical areas that also wanted to have a space that they could design, that is definitely something that we could make.
Yeah, it's super cool. You know, a lot of the youth in the communities, they know these spots, you know, these cool spots in the area that have significance to them for certain reasons. And we wanted to make sure that as we build the landscape, that those spots, even though this is again taking place in a post-apocalyptic version of those spaces, that the stories the youth have about their landscape and their region are still intact in the land. So as we travel through, if there's spots that you know, that the best sweetgrass picking spot is still going to be there, and the best fishing spots are going to be there, and you know, where the wheat cake grows, those places will still be there as the elders and the youth tell their stories about those spaces on our homelands.
Amazing. And with that, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or Grocery Checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek coffee today.
Okay, let's see here. Blend equal parts science and stories. Add a few shakes of music and soundscape, and wrap it all up in a big question. How can we see this more than human world in a new light and take part in shaping a healthy Anthropocene? Catch Future Ecologies every Sunday at 8 a.m. on CITR.
Do you want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both. Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder, because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM, Cleo Skibinski-CJ. You're tuned in to Unceded Airwaves. Today we are talking about the Indigenous Metaverse, Piscopium. I'm joined by Maya and Carolyn today. We're talking about gamified learning of the Anishinaabe Mwen, which is Anishinaabe language. And we just finished talking about the geographical significance within the game and how real places are incorporated into the digital imagination of the creators with the information provided by youth and local folks. And thinking about that still, I have such a love for the idea of the value it will bring to urban and especially urban Indigenous youth, being able to connect to the land in places that the land isn't accessible at times. Because although this game is set in a post-apocalyptic place, somewhere in the future, I've always been very assertive that we do already live in the post-apocalypse, in the world that we are in. The colonial apocalypse is ongoing, and we're all figuring out how to survive with all the rules that don't make sense, because they've never made sense. They're all too simplistic for the diversity and monument of human existence and of all the nations that live here. And in the last segment, we were talking a bit about how there's the potential to grow this metaverse to include other nations and other languages. And that makes me so excited, because something I've been thinking about a lot lately is how before colonization, folks would know more than just one language. Being multilingual was very common because the people around you were multilingual and you're interacting with so many folks that had their own cultures and languages, but it wasn't in a vacuum. We were all interacting all together, whether it be through trade, kinship, coming upon and stumbling upon people and be like, hey, what's up? Let's be friends. And I think that's like a beautiful potential for this game of facilitating that and continuing that practice and showing that it will return. It is returning. And it's giving me so much hope and so many big, good feelings.
Oh, that's awesome. And I totally agree with you. That's why about us being in a post-apocalyptic situation already as Indigenous peoples. We lived through an apocalypse where our ways of life were decimated. And not just our ways of life, but our forms of insistence on a certain reality. Like, I can't go plant acoustic in front of the grocery store and, you know, and have that doesn't count anymore. So our form of existence, even our days of the week, our notions of time and cyclical ways of moving through our land, our homelands, has been destroyed in this colonial matrix of power. So that's why I put the world of Biscabian into a post-apocalypse. And in the story quest, it's the beginning of the post-apocalypse. We're starting at this new beginning where we're beginning to, like the word Biscabian means, we're beginning to return back along from a long and difficult journey. We're returning home. And as you return home from a long and difficult journey, the stuff that you went through doesn't go away. You carry it with you. And home is going to look different. It's not going to be, you know, this pristine utopic past. It's not. There are still these challenges and these issues that we have to tackle, linguicidals to fight, and ongoing work to build community. And that's what I really want to show inside the Biscabian world, is that this is still work to be done. It's not a finished, happy ending story. We all have to commit to working on it. And for urban youth, gosh, you're absolutely right. I think of even my children who are urban, and we go to ceremony and we go to the bush, but many of their friends don't have access and wouldn't know a blueberry from a Saskatoon berry to save their lives. So wanting to be able to teach that to young urban youth as well, and connect urban youth to reserve kids, to fly in remote communities, to have that connection. And my thinking is, if any of you are on the res and have a computer, usually that computer, there's only one of them if you're lucky, and it's like on the kitchen table or in the living room. Like, it's not, you know, it's not like one computer per bedroom kind of situation. So I imagine somebody playing Biscabian sitting at the kitchen table on the computer, and Gokum grandma walks by and is hearing, you know, these teachings and the language being used. And then Gokum is going to want to interact with that child and say, oh yeah, I know about that, and share some more. So there's this, even if Gokum, if grandma isn't playing on the computer, the game, it's the world itself, she can hear what's happening, and maybe we can, by doing that, promote that intergenerational knowledge and language transmission again within the families. Those are some of my hopefuls for the project.
And I agree, Maya, about how important the social connection is through Biscabian, whether that is you're playing with others present with you, or that you meet others in the world. And I think that is why we want it to be a world where you're not isolated, like there are others there. It could be another teacher or trainer or another learner that you can practice Anishinaabe Mo'en with in the world of Biscabian. And we do appreciate that it can be very isolating when you play a solo game, like, and that the connection is so important. And also that some do prefer to learn on their own. So there will be both that option, as Maya said before, that you could go off into your own instance with a smaller group or on your own, and it will be a safe space, a safe environment. And despite the apocalyptic theme, Biscabian is going to be a safe and fun environment to explore.
Yeah, I think, of, you know, I'll tell you as a secret, my entire social life is online. Gaming, like my friends,
mostly same.
even pre-pandemic, like my life, I'm a gamer. That's what I do. I don't go to bars. I don't go out to dances and movies or anything like that. When I have time off outside of ceremonies and teachings, I'm on my games, man. Those are where my friends are at. So I'm hoping that this this world will also create those long-lasting connections with one another across our homelands.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree. I definitely came up in the generation of like Gen Z millennial cusp area where a lot of my friends are the gamers. I'm not proficient with video games. I enjoy like the easy like farming simulators and Stardew Valley and Minecraft. Mostly the open world ones because I'm not tied and bound to a campaign and following through all these steps and being alone. It's fun to play with others. I'm a big board game person, and everything you just described, I'm like, yeah, I feel that for sure. And thinking back to the example of the computer on the kitchen table with grandma coming through and being like, I understand what's going on here. I recognize that. And I was even thinking about the accessibility of Biscopiyung as a digital platform and how it'd be accessible to folks that aren't just the youth and folks that are familiar with computers and video games and hand-finger coordination, because sometimes it's really confusing. Like the amount of times my mom and I have played Mario Kart and I'm like, Mom, you're going the wrong way. She's like, no, I'm not. I'm like, that's what that big turnaround sign means. But that's also like the intergenerational learning of like, it's not just top down, but it's also, it's all encompassing. Whether or not it's your elder being like, oh, this would be a word you can use here. But it's also the youth being like, oh, you can also use this platform this way, doing this with the controls. And I was wondering, in terms of accessibility, what platform is Biscopiyung being designed for? Is it VR or is it like point and click? And how would that be accessible to folks in communities, especially those that aren't too familiar with those kind of digital platforms and interacting areas?
So Biscopiyung is made using the Unity 3D engine. So it will be something you can just download on your computer. You won't need to have any prior knowledge of any kind of platform. And it will be VR, but instead of like, well, actually not instead of, it will be flat screen based. So you won't need a headset, but we could make it headset compatible in the future should the need arise. But at the moment, I think headsets make things less accessible because they are quite expensive. But I mean, if someone had the funding and they wanted to come in with a headset, I think it would be a great experience. But I think with the accessibility, you're right that it's, yeah, mostly a new generation of learners that would kind of adapt to the world of Biscopiyung, and we would hope that they would share with an elder generation like how to walk around or how to communicate. But I think what we're doing at the moment, which Maya will talk about, I'm sure, is like the involvement of elders in not just playing, but writing the content, like helping to create the quests and helping us to have the right language or the most important things to them. So that would be something we would be very open about, I think, in that if they wanted to share their knowledge, that would be something that would be appreciated by us a lot.
Yeah, and I love the Unity. I love Unity because it is VR compatible. Down the road, when VR becomes a little bit more accessible, we can use VR headsets. But we wanted to make sure that you don't need a gaming computer to run this game. Your basic computer can be able to run it, and a headset with a microphone, even a cheap one, you'll still be able to talk in zone chat or in your group chat and still have that audio dialogue component. But UniVirtual is pretty cool. The reason I picked working with UniVirtual, that's Carolyn, who's here with me, I did shop around quite a bit for finding folks who can work with me on creating the content in an accessible way. And I found UniVirtual in Second Life, which is a fairly, you know, any computer can run Second Life. And they had created this really dynamic, interactive biology class. And it was super cool. But I don't like Second Life as a platform. just because there's so much toxic stuff that, you know, if we have youth who don't know how to avoid those things, could end up winding up in worlds that are 18 plus and maybe not the best space. So Univirtual actually created its own platform using Unity, which is why it's called Univirtual, as an education-based platform that has all the mechanics that we need for running the content, but is also its own standalone platform where you're not going to end up running into problematic things like you do in something like Second Life. And I don't like the graphics in Second Life. I love the Unity. They're rich. You all can see the trailer for Biscabia, and you'll see like just this vibrant, rich imagery that I wanted to make sure was maintained, so that we don't just have a little pixelated Minecraft version of this. Not to say Minecraft isn't fun or anything, but I wanted it really look like home.
Emma is exactly right. That we do work with Second Life, and we do know some very good workarounds for the issues that you mentioned. But with building on our own platform, we have like the full control of everything. So if basically it's limitless, like whatever Maya would like to create, whatever quests are designed, like we can build them, and there's no restrictions really. Anything goes.
Yeah, and the cool thing for me is every mechanic that we have inside Biscabium has been carefully considered by the elders. So, you know, typical in games, you have some form of currency where you can upgrade, you can buy, you know, you have gold or gil or whatever, where you can then use to at a vendor to upgrade your gear. And in Anishinaabe way, we didn't use currency like that. We didn't have a monetary system. We have a system of trade. And so, you know, we're working on concepts like using our teachings around kindness as kindness tokens or tokens of kindness. And that way, if you do an act of kindness for grandmother, do a little side quest, you earn these tokens that allow you then to trade for other things. So just like, you know, carefully thinking through decolonizing game mechanics was a really important part of how we are developing this project. And, you know, if you want to pick berries, you need in our traditions, you need to make a tobacco offering. So you're not going to be able to interact and harvest berries unless you've done something to earn the tobacco that you need to go and put a tobacco offering down before you harvest those berries. So no one can just go and farm the land for resources and become OP in mm-hmm. and all the goods that they have. It's about reciprocity with the land and with one another.
And it has been an honor to learn how to, like, as you said, Maya, to decolonize game dev. Like, it, you teach us so much, and it's really important that we save this knowledge. So, I'm so happy to be a part of this process.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love the amount of thought and care going into this game. There's so much love in it. Love for the language, the people, the land, and for what it could be. And I know that your team for Biscabion has a 10-year goal. Why 10 years?
Well, we have just entered, that's a great question. We've just entered this fabulous thing called the UN Decade on Indigenous Languages. It is a 10-year plan, and we're part, you know, we've signed up to the UN Decade as one of the projects that'll be part of that decade. And so we're following the timeline for the UN decade, and it's a perfect timeline just in general for us. It came at the right time because it's about Indigenous languages, but it takes that long to build to build a beautiful world. We'll definitely have the world up much sooner than the 10-year process, but those final years will be all about expanding into other people's homelands if they want us, and building in new languages, other languages, and elders' teachings and community teachings as we build the world.
And being part of that Indigenous Decade community as well is really important for us, because we can then aim not only towards the resurgence of Anishinaabe Mon, but of other Indigenous like communities and languages. And it was, as Mo said, it came along at the perfect time, and a lot of their vision for that decade is like we share like their focuses there. And we're actually going to be talking at the World Summit of the Information Society, or WISIS, this year in March about that. So that is part of the UN decade as well, like some of the work that we'll be doing to that. So hopefully have a link to that soon by the time this goes out.
And hey, maybe eventually we will have Biscabian cover the entire globe, and every Indigenous language in the world will have its own zone.
Oh, the potential.
It'd be great.
Yeah, I'd be an absolutely beautiful place to be in a couple of years, and just have that component be so magical. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Oh, this is such a wonderful conversation, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes, because I know there's always the rhetoric of Indigenous people are not capable of being involved in the online world or in media or new technologies. But ever since new technologies have been around, whether it be as far back as scissors being new, they've been indigenized. They've been taken by Indigenous people. We look at it, we're like, why would you use it this way when it's so much better this way? And I love to see how it's like turning out on your guys' end. I've actually had the privilege, I'm in a course right now with David Gardner called Indigenous New Media, where we're talking a lot about video games, or talking about like film and poetry. Films is a big center for this course right now for us. And we played a VR game called Bedaubin. At the moment, I cannot remember who the creator of Bedaubin is particularly. Perhaps I'll put in the show notes for folks to also check it out. But it is through the Oculus, and it's also set in a dystopian world centering on Anishinaabe Mon. And something really cool from it was the language you hear is Anishinaabe Mon, and it's written out for you before it changes into English after, to make sure you know what's going on if you don't know quite all the words. And as someone that's not Anishinaabe but has folks in my life that are, the language does come up. I do know simple phrases that they use. And listening to that game, I was like, I hear what they hear at home. And that's a wonderful connection to understand someone better. That even the idea of Biscabian being not exclusively for Indigenous people, but being open to everyone that is interested and wants to be there and take part in this learning process, absolutely beautiful. Because in a decolonized future and in a decolonized process that we are in right now, I believe that folks will be speaking the Indigenous language of the region that they're in, regardless of their background and how they came to be in that place.
Yeah, that is my hope. I mean, I really do believe that we have possibilities to work together with non-Indigenous folks to build a different future. And that's what I want to move forward with. And that Bedaubin work is absolutely stellar.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it.
It was absolutely beautiful. It's just a beautiful storyline. And when I saw your project website and I was looking through it, I was like, this is substantive in the same way that Bedaubin had an impact, where I was thinking about it for days after, of just the visuals and looking around and seeing the world. I was like, whoa. And having that kind of space be interactive, it's beautiful because of all the potential it has. Like everything we've talked about today on this episode, it fills me with so much joy and excitement for what's to come. And I wonder, when will folks be able to join in on the participation of Biscabian? When will folks be able to download it and play with it?
We actually have a demo coming out very soon, which is exciting. So that will be in within the next month, I think. And that's kind of the introduction to the kind of mechanics that you might see. And while we're still working on putting everything together for the quests and also getting the funding that we need to create this world, that you can also like follow along at the moment if you go to the website and into your email. Like, we're going to be sharing the journey as we go, so that would be a good way to check in with how we're doing.
Oh, so exciting. My last question before we wrap up the show is, has there ever been a conversation of partnering with particular communities to set up sessions to try out and participate in the game?
Yeah, our first relationship is with Nokiwin, which represents five different communities, and it'll be the youth from those communities who will be part of the alpha testing and the beta testing process. And then, of course, the elders and the youth both collaborating on the additional stories and the traditional knowledge. So that is critical to us all. And, you know, I sit in a funny position sort of between, you know, virtual, which is, you know, a learning platform building corporation, and Nokiwin Tribal Council representing the communities in the area, and then, you know, my little spot at York University as a professor. So it's been a really interesting dynamic, and making sure that any of the traditional knowledge that is produced inside Biskabiang belongs to community and is determined by community is our number one priority. So as we start to expand and see other partnerships, the same principles will apply. You know, the knowledge that they generate for the project belongs to them. The direction that they want to take in terms of their quests and their adventures and their languages, it belongs to that community as we move forward. I hope that answers your question.
It did. Thank you. Masi Cho Miigwech Gilakusla. I really appreciate both of your time today. And what a joy it is to have this conversation. Like, I feel so invigorated to start my week knowing folks are putting in this work and this love into such projects, especially as a young person and looking at the generation underneath me and the generations to come. I'm like, this is going to be groundbreaking for so many other people to also pick up the same task of being like, we can indigenize anything, especially things that we enjoy, like video games and card games.
Absolutely. It's an absolute pleasure to hang out with you today. I really appreciate giving us time to talk about the project. Miigwech.
Thank you, Carolyn and Maya. And if you ever want to come back on Unseated Airwaves, say when things start to pick up and things are going well or you're changing direction, I would love to talk about it again. I would be so excited to hear how this goes down. I'll definitely be following it through my email and also your socials. Before we end, where can people find you on the interweb?
So biskabiang.com is the main hub where you can find everything. But depending on what socials you enjoy, we are also on Instagram as biskabiang as well. Would you like me to spell it out?
Yes, please.
Okay. So it's biskabiyaang. We're also on Facebook, same name, Biskabiang, and Twitter as well. And yeah, you can also follow, as I mentioned before, drop your email in at the website, and we're going to be sending out our first newsletter soon with lots of information about what's going on behind the scenes. And yeah, very excited to share everything that we have.
Beautiful, amazing. Any last thoughts for listeners? Any reflections or food for thoughts?
Don't eat rabbit turds.
I'm going to say the same.
I will keep that in mind going forward, especially in my educational path that I'm taking. Hopefully, not too many rabbit turds in my future. Hopefully there are some berries out there that do not taste like that. Well, Musi Cho, have a wonderful day, and I'll be talking to you guys hopefully in the future.
Me, which, Baba Pete.
We'd be honored. Thank you, Clea.
Hey, we're J+J+J, and I bet you're listening to